I know that as plant parents, we definitely learn a lot from plants, but I think it taught me to not be selfish, be mindful of the needs of others. In this case, it taught me a lot about my plants and where my plants should go.
Doom, do, 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 do. Hi, plant people. Welcome to episode 56 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Hi, plant friends. I hope you're all doing so wonderfully and that you've been enjoying our last few episodes, the Plant Latin 101 episode with Chris and my recent plant side chat about the redwoods. This past month was absolutely insane. I was in LA for a month with Cats the Musical, doing 8 shows a week, but also trying to squeeze in every freaking planty thing I could because LA is so filled with so many amazing planty opportunities. My heart is just still exploding over the first live taping of Bloom and Grow Radio. I'm so excited to bring you guys that episode and share the amazing conversation that I had with Danae and Christine about plant community, the do's and don'ts, and the 101, the 201. It ended up being such an amazing conversation. So thank you to those of you who showed up and who came and got your tickets. It was just truly magical to see you, and it's really inspired me to continue creating meetups for you guys. So by the time this episode publishes, we'll have had a meetup in Seattle, and I'm actively working on a few more meetups in Tucson, Austin, and San Diego right now. So let me know if you guys live in those cities and want to help out. So I'm really excited about this episode for two reasons. Number one, this is your episode. This is our community episode, the call-in episode about plant fails. Plant friends, everyone take a moment of silence to bow our heads for the plants that we've lost in our planty journeys of plant parenthood. Because my friends, I don't care how gorgeously curated your Instagram feed is, I don't care how photo worthy your apartment is, we have all had a plant fail in our history, but for some reason we feel this weird shame around it. I think it's hard for us to stomach our not so perfect plant parenthood moments when we're surrounded by these perfect photos all the time. Even not photos, but in the garden centers when we get these beautiful plants that are like so perfectly cared for, and then we bring them home and they're not thriving the way they used to. So I had this idea for the episode when I was personally struggling with this problem last month. I am the host of a podcast about houseplants, and my prized indoor citrus trees that I talk about all the time, they're the apples of my eye. They both got lemony snicket and limey, got a really nasty spider mite infestation. And I felt incredible shame about it. I felt like I was supposed to have it all figured out because I'm the host of the show, even though I am a novice and I do learn with you guys. But I was really surprised at how embarrassed and shameful I felt about spider mites, which is something that we all get at some point in our life. So I knew immediately after that kind of reaction that I needed to turn to you guys for support and education. And also, I knew that I needed to make some sort of episode that highlights this because there is a lesson in every plant fail. That is essentially how I went from plant killer to plant lady, was slowly learning from my plant fails about how to not kill my plants anymore. A couple of plant fails that I want to quickly list off just to share with you guys. Number one, don't leave your plants in an unair-conditioned apartment in the height of summer for an entire week. That's something I did in the very early stages of my plant parenthood. I only had maybe like 6 or 10 plants, and I left for a whole week. It was like 90 degrees. We live 4 flights up, and I got home, and my plants were so upset with me. They basically were like cooking in my apartment for an entire week. So I learned that you've got to have some sort of air circulation and some sort of air cooling situation going on, even if you leave your plants for a while in the dead of summer. My biggest one that I talk about all the time is make sure that your plants have drainage. I'm really doubling down on that this year, but when I was a plant killer, I used to stick little succulents in teacups with no drainage whatsoever. I would literally just like take them out of the nursery pot and put them in the teacup with a little bit more soil, and I would drown my plants. So I had to really figure out what I was doing, drowning my plants in these teacups. as a plant killer until I learned to stop doing that. And now I think because I used to do that all the time and I'm so embarrassed about it, I'm really committed to having pots with drainage now in my apartment. So that has been a real positive end result of something negative that I was doing. And spider mites, I feel like I'm still digesting my whole experience with spider mites. Limey and Lemony are on the mend. It was a really bad infestation, so I'm really loving the Espoma horticultural soap. I'll link to it in the show notes, but we had to cut them back. We had to really hack them back, cut off a lot of their leaves that were way too damaged from the spider mites. We were kind of drenching them in this horticultural soap. Gave them some good showers in our bathtub and hope for the best. And they made us a little bit nervous for about a month, and now they're putting on a lot of new growth. But spider mites taught us a lot. I mean, we really do have to check in on those citrus. It's hard to have citrus indoors, and I'm very proud that we do it, but it's not their ideal situations. And often spider mites are a sign of the plant being in stress. So we are committed to making sure that we're kind of setting those citrus up. Ideally, I think maybe we need to be giving them a little bit more light. I lowered the Soltec solution light that I have closer to their leaves to try to improve the quality of light that they're getting, and I'll report back. So there's lessons in everything, and why not have our whole community share the lessons that we've learned? So I put out a call to action on Instagram and in this podcast about a month and a half ago, asking for you guys to call in with the lessons that you've learned from your plant fails. And oh my gosh, you guys did so good. There's so many of you that we're going to hear from today, learning from your unique experiences and stories. And I just feel so thankful to be a part of this amazing community. I think I'm really feeling the love for you guys, especially because I'm traveling. So I'm getting to meet you in real life now, making you all my plant friends in real life. What a special little corner of the universe that we all exist in as kind, wonderful plant parents. I'm just so thankful for you guys, so thankful that I get to show up with this podcast and serve you guys and meet you in real life and just be a part of this community. And the second part of why I'm so excited about this episode is it is the launch of a really fun project that I've been working on with another listener. So this episode, Plant Friends, is sponsored by the Bloom and Grow Plant Friend apparel line. A sweet listener who is also named Maria, Maria Richkova, reached out to me. She is a marketing professional and a beautiful designer. And I had put a call to action several months ago about wanting to do a line of merch for the show, but having no bandwidth to do it. And she kindly offered to help. So in partnership, we have created a really fun, we're calling it the Plant Friend Apparel line. So it's a line of t-shirts, baseball tees, the cutest crew neck sweatshirts you'll ever see, sweatshirts, accessories that are not only Bloom and Grow Radio. You could totally buy a t-shirt that has the Bloom and Grow Radio logo on it, or a mug that has the Bloom and Grow Radio logo on it. But something that I've struggled with as a plant parent is that I've always wanted a really cute plant lady shirt, and I couldn't really find any that I liked on the internet, so I ended up just making one for myself. I designed it on the internet and made it and had it shipped to me, and I just wear it when I do Bloom and Grow stuff. But I've gotten so many questions from you guys about where I've gotten that shirt, and I'm unable to sell it. So Maria and I worked on replicating that shirt, so we have an adorable line of plant lady tees, totes, tanks, sweatshirts. It's amazing. And for my botanical bros, we've got a whole line of botanical bro stuff for you. It is so freaking cute, and the shirts are so cozy. I'm actually wearing the crew neck sweatshirt. It's the coziest fleece sweatshirt I've ever worn. I honestly haven't taken it off since I got it. I'm wearing it as I record it for you guys right now. You're going to see on my Instagram a bunch of photos of me in the stuff. I might do a separate episode where I review the sizes and stuff for different things. It's been a really fun project, essentially just designing stuff that I feel like I would want to wear as a plant lady, or what I would want Billy to wear as a botanical bro. Maria has been absolutely incredible. She's also a member of our plant community. So we would love for you to go check out what we've been working so hard for you on. So you can go to bloomandgrowradio.com/resources, and it's going to be the first thing you see on my resource page. We'll also put the direct link to the shop. It's on a website called threadless.com. We're going to put the direct link to the shop in the show notes. You can also always just go to my resource page on my website to find it. give it a look, and maybe I'll see you on the street one day in a plant lady shirt. They're really just so cute. I'm having so much fun wearing them all over the country and having people give me compliments. I just love also that this is our community episode, and it just kind of perfectly lined up with being the episode that I wanted to launch the Plant Friend Apparel line with. And I love that it's a line that we designed for this community, sponsoring an episode by the community. How freaking awesome is that? All right, friends, your first plant friend to hear from today, here's Bree.
I wasn't planning on calling in a story about my plant sales, but then I found myself this morning in my pajamas, on my knees, in the family bathroom at my parents' house, digging through the dried out remains of my prized spider plant. So my plant lady status began while I was still in college and only grew from there. This past July, I decided it was time to move back to my hometown, aka moving back in with my parents, which meant that I had to figure out a way to transport everything I owned, including 15 plants, in a car without air conditioning for 6 hours in the middle of July. Already stressful enough, but 2 weeks before I moved, I came down with a bad case of spider mites. I panicked and honestly just began throwing plants away, pots and all, as I found more and more spider mites in my very, very tiny, tiny room. When I finally did make it back down to my parents' house, I repotted a bunch of my plants and sprayed them down with some horticultural soap, and that's when every single one of them went into shock and were dropping leaves left and right. And I ended up having to throw away even more of my plants, about half of my collection. So I've slowly rebuilt my plant babies, but I also fell into a depressive slump and started ignoring my plants, as embarrassing as it is, but it's true. Until today, when I finally decided to move my dying spider plant and found mold all over the bottom of my plant. Everywhere. Half of the pot was mold and the roots were all drying out and it was terrible. I think I've managed to save my beautiful spider baby, but the plant sale was real. That being said, I'm also kind of happy that I neglected my plants so badly that they began to mold over, because it was the kick in the butt that I needed to start caring about my plants again. And I'm starting to feel more like myself again.
The plant fail was real, Bree. Bree, thank you for vulnerably sharing this story. I love your sense of humor when it comes to telling it and how you're taking this on as a challenge. I know that I have definitely gone through periods where I maybe neglect my plants or I don't give them the time that they need, but you honed in on exactly what we all need to remember. Sometimes you just need a plant fail as a little kick in the butt, a little spider mite attack to kind of wake you up and re-inspire you to get back into your hobby and back to caring for your plants. So I'm really sorry you went through a rough season in life, but I'm so excited that the seasons are changing and you're entering a new season full of bloom where your passion for your plants is reinvigorated. Next up, we hear from listener Eva and how a plant fail turned her into a crazy plant lady sleuth in her outdoor garden.
I wanted to tell a story about how I've moved from being living in New York City in a teeny apartment. I had no yard, no balcony. I lived with other people, so I couldn't even really fully embrace my plant obsession. It was a mild obsession then. I actually moved for graduate school to Virginia. So I moved into this house that had a nice big yard. I'm renting it though, so I can only do a certain amount of modifications, but it's just got these ginkgo trees all around. It has these mulberry trees, and I was super excited, a sunny backyard that I could grow vegetables and all sorts of other plants. So, you know, I wasn't super familiar with gardening. Like, you know, I was familiar with houseplants, mostly orchids at the time. So it was new for me, but I fully went into it. I built these raised beds in the sunniest area. I was, you know, thinking about all the vegetables I was going to pick from my garden. I bought all the seeds. I was growing herbs and everything like that. And they were really flourishing at the beginning. You know, I had really put a ton of money into it and time. And I had long cucumber plants that were growing up trellises and stuff like that. So I was so excited. And then things started going a little bit downhill. They were blooming less. I was barely getting any fertilized vegetables from the blooms. The plants seemed to dehydrate like way too easily, and they stopped growing when I knew that they were big, but they should be like indeterminate growers, so keep on growing. I thought that I was just doing something wrong, being a total newbie to growing vegetables and to growing, you know, I had roses and stuff like that as well. And so I ended up writing it off. But at the end of the summer, when it was turning to be fall, I was preparing, you know, the beds for the next year. So I was thinking maybe I would replenish soil, make the soil better. I would, you know, give it some fertilizer. And I realized that the ground that was my raised bed, but this nice soil, was just a matted mess of roots. I couldn't even pull out any of my plants like that were in there. It was just this crazy network of roots had overtaken the whole area. We didn't know where it was coming from. This was a sunny part of the yard, so there was really no big plants anywhere near it. It was really confusing to me, but it was clearly choking out my plants. I mean, there was no soil even left. It had totally overtaken the whole garden bed, and it took me a while to really notice that this was the cause of all my plants doing so poorly towards the end of the summer. And after discovering this and hacking away at it, we decided we had to take away the raised bed. We had to just take them apart because it was just impossible to, it wasn't even soil anymore. It was just a root mess. And so I think I was trying to identify what type of mulberry trees were around us. I noticed some pictures of mulberry root systems on Google, just by Googling stuff, and it was saying that they can outreach way beyond their canopy, which is kind of unlike most trees. And so that kind of clicked in my head that even though this tree seems very far away from where I was trying to garden, it could be its roots. And I think best guess as to what's happening, because I could still cannot plant anything in the ground. I kind of wondered when I moved in, I was like, this is the worst landscaping I've ever seen, like, why isn't... And someone had landscape fabric down, so I knew that someone attempted to do it at one time, but there was seriously nothing alive. It's just like barren, except for grass. And then I really found out that it was this mulberry tree. And to this day, I have many pots all around my garden. It's just like, I look like a crazy person, and all these pots I see, and there's big pots everywhere. And I've just probably spent so much money now on ceramic pots and huge pots. Luckily, I have a porch that I can put a lot of them on, but some of them are still in the garden because they like that full sun. Even then, I have to move them ever so often because the roots come out of the ground and up the bottom drainage holes in the pot and start filling up their pots. And, you know, I assume we'll choke these plants out too. So I just found out that some trees have really invasive root systems, and it's way more astonishing than you would ever assume it being. It's just like unbelievable. I felt like something from a sci-fi movie.
Ava, I love how this actually kind of wasn't a plant fail, but it was an opportunity for you to learn more about the local trees in your neighborhood and the local flora and fauna. Talk about survival of the fittest, man. That's like real nature. That doesn't happen in the houseplant world. It kind of reminds me of once I had a Tradescantia growing down my window, and part of the long trailing stem actually rooted in one of my pots that I had a money tree, a Pachyra aquatica, in. But that's like the most aggressive thing I've ever had a houseplant do. So those are super aggressive sounding roots. But good for you for reacting to your current surroundings, moving your plants into pots, keeping them in the sun. You're going to occasionally have to monitor those roots growing up into your pots, which is still unbelievable that that happens. But you're continuing to bloom and grow your outdoor collection no matter how crazy those roots can be. So I give you kudos, my plant friend. All right, how about a botanical bro listener? Mr. Jesse Hall is going to tell us about how your partner can aid or harm your plant babies.
Hey, plant friends. My name is Jesse Hall. I'm a 26-year-old plant dad from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And the funny story is my boyfriend picked me up a tiny asparagus fern from this plant store. I was super excited and touched that he had done that, but I had heard, you know, that they like humidity, so I decided to keep it in the window of my shower. My shower has kind of a cutout window. So I told him, I said, make sure that you take it out and set it on the shelf when you shower so that there's no soap residue on stuff that could get on the plant and harm it. Needless to say, that night he gets in, forgets about it, showers, and it immediately, the next couple of days, starts bleaching out and dying. So He bought me the plant and then killed it like the same day, which was cute. And I immediately got another one and now we take it out.
Listen, plant friends, Jesse, you hit the nail on the head. I'm going to be real with you. Sometimes it's about the effort from our partners in plants and not about the result. The fact that your sweet boyfriend even brought you a plant home is a complete win. And it sounds like you really know and recognize that. And hopefully maybe he learned something from that plant fail as well. And maybe it's inspired him to kind of learn a little bit more about plants and you guys can grow together as a couple in this hobby. I'm so happy to hear that you're both blooming and growing together. Billy recently brought me home a tiny stem cutting of a fiddly fig, and the sheer delight on his face for being able to bring me home a fancy fiddly fig that we've always looked at, you know, on Instagram, and he was so proud of the good price he got it for. It was just like the most heartwarming thing. It made the actual act of getting my first fiddly fig, which you would think would be like a major excitement for me, actually pale in comparison to the heartwarming warm and fuzzies I got from just how excited he was from getting it for me. So I can totally relate in this story. Speaking of partners in plants and them meaning well, let's hear from Lorraine about how her dad helped her on a plant shopping outing one day.
So my most memorable plant fail is more so purchasing a variegated monstera and then slowly but surely killing said monstera. A few years ago, I go to my local plant store to purchase a variegated monstera. This beautiful half-white, half-green single leaf that TBH was kind of struggling. This was right before variegated monsteras became popular, so it was fairly priced at $20. I told my dad, who was with me, someone who was unfamiliar with plants, that this is a rare plant, but great find. He chuckled and said, "The leaves don't look healthy. Are you sure you want to buy it?" I said, "Yes, I'm happy I found it. Everything will be fine." As I walk around to shop for more plants, I overhear my dad talk to the owner. My dad, involuntarily helping my plant shopping addiction and budget, tried bargaining with the owner over how the plant is half dead. The owner was standoffish to begin with and told my dad off and said he's going to charge twice, then three times as much for bargaining. He told my dad that the plant may not even survive because of the lack of green leaves. Before he raised the price any further, I rushed over and said, "That's not necessary. It's fine that the plant isn't doing so well." And we went off to shop for more plants. I told my dad to mum the word from here on out, no more taking him plant shopping with me. He agreed and said he won't get in the way of my plant addiction anymore. So we go home with my new variegated monstera and I care for it as best as I could. Now, fast forward to this day, things haven't been going as well as I hoped. As new white leaves grow without any sign of green leaves, I tell myself the owner was right. The plant may not survive. The original leaf's green side is yellowing along the edges while the white side has completely browned, then withered to the point of non-existing. As I look at this plant, I remember that time I should have let my dad continue bargaining with the plant shop owner until I no longer could afford the now sad and failed plant.
Lorraine, that is the most adorable freaking story. You have the sweetest dad helping you try and find a bargain. Oh my gosh, just I love it. But the lesson learned here too that you could argue is always talk to and listen to the plant shop owners who seem knowledgeable. Because he had given you a heads up, and plant shop owners and employees can be such helpful resources for us to help us learn more about our plants and figure out if they're the right ones for us to take home. So that's an awesome lesson learned that I hope everybody takes to heart. Now let's move on to the cacti section of this episode. We've had several listeners call in with cacti plant fails, which makes total sense because they're surprisingly tricky to care for indoors. But we had lots of different situations. So first up is going to be Mara.
And I wanted to share my little anecdote that I tell most people when it comes to cacti. I have about 45 plants now, definitely a former plant killer, and more than half of them are probably cacti or succulents. My classic story is that I had been going through a divorce about 3 years ago and had this cactus that I had had all throughout the period of the first year of me dealing with that, and I completely ignored it. Didn't look at it, never ever watered it, and it did fine. And then as soon as I got my shit back together, it just died. It completely rotted from overwatering, and there was nothing I could do. It was gone. So that's kind of my anecdote relating to care for cacti, is that they just need to be ignored. That is the best care advice I can give. And of course, proper drainage. And now I have a healthier relationship with my cacti and my succulents, where I have a better watering schedule, but it's still very light waterings, no misting. So yeah, that was pretty much what I wanted to share.
So Mara gave us great advice about cacti. Just leave them the heck alone. Water them infrequently. Don't pay too much attention to them. They're great for low maintenance plant parents. But I could really relate to, Mara, what you were talking about with going into a different season of your life and having a different desire of how to care for that plant. That like hit home. I can totally relate. I went through a bout of depression last year and noticed that I actually wanted to spend more time caring for my plants because I noticed it made me feel better. But after that depression lifted, I was super busy. I was overscheduled and stressed, but also engaged with a lot of my friends. I actually found that I was wanting to care less for my plants, or I was just so busy I was forgetting to water them, and then I would maybe overwater them. So I've totally gone through phases like that as well. This is also something several plant friends have actually been mentioning to me, just like the seasonality of being in love with caring for plants and then kind of like being over it and then getting into it again. This is like a conversation that keeps coming up for me. So it's interesting that that's what you shared. Here's a different cacti plant fail that might make you giggle a little bit, from my plant friend Becca, who you guys might know as De La Plants on Instagram and YouTube.
Here we go. So I was seeing a really big trend of mini macrame hangers in people's cars hanging from their rearview mirror. It was really cute. So I thought that I would set out to buy a tiny little cactus so that I can make a macrame hanger for it and put it in my car, because I had plants at home, I had plants at work. So why not also have plants in my car? It seemed like the best idea ever. So I potted up the cactus, hung it up in my car, and was so pleased with myself. I really felt like a true plant lady. And before I move on, I should say that I live in Tucson, Arizona, which is a place that gets up to 118 degrees in the summer, and that would be 47 degrees Celsius for our foreign friends. And basically, in either Fahrenheit or Celsius, that's really hot. And imagine that heat being trapped into a car with, like, no flowing oxygen. Yeah, so the cactus absolutely baked, and I was so confused as to how this could have happened, because cactus are supposed to love the heat, right? Yeah, no, not that kind of heat, and definitely not that kind of heat in a car. And so basically it got all mushy and collapsed into itself and turned white, and it was so gross and a total fail. You know, I grew up around cactus my whole life. I was so disappointed because I should have known that this would be a total fail, but I just really wanted to be trendy. So after I zoomed in on other people's photos after the fail, because I was like, how did they do it? And I couldn't. I realized that they were using fake plants. So let's just say I'm not willing to even do this with a fake plant now, because I'm so scarred from this experience.
Becca, thank you for sharing this. I love your sense of humor while telling the story. But I wanted to just say, it's okay if you have a plant fail on something that you feel like you were an expert on. I could totally get, you know, you live in the desert, you feel like you should know cacti, and all of a sudden you still killed one. But you tried an experiment. It didn't go the way you planned. But I feel like the emphasis and what I want to applaud you for is that you still tried something new. The key is that you're growing and learning and trying new things, and now you know better. And how would you really put those two things together until you kind of experienced frying the cactus, right? And also, I love just the basic advice of, if you want some ornamental plants in your car, then maybe just get a fake plant. That's a fake plant moment, and that is A-okay. Speaking of the hot, hot heat, let's listen to a plant fail and lesson learned from Leanna.
My number one fail that I probably learned towards the startup of my plant hobby was, do not apply neem oil during the summertime, specifically above 85 degrees, but I've kind of just decided to avoid it totally in the summer and warmer months. But one time I had a huge mealybug infestation, and I treated a whole bunch of plants in the middle of summer with neem oil, and I think all of them died within that week of just severe burns. Most of them have dropped all their leaves. It was a very quick death. Anyways, that is my number one thing that I have learned through killing plants is do not apply neem oil in warm weather.
Thanks, Leanna, for sharing that story. Neem oil is really a tricky one. I feel like there are camps of people who swear by neem oil, and then there are camps of people who hate it. I've avoided using it personally because people have told me that it might clog the plant's ability to respirate, like the oil kind of clogs the pores. But I honestly don't have enough info on this, and I do feel like it would be a great episode topic. So I will start thinking about that. But this is great advice for people who do use neem oil, because essentially, Leanna, it's so funny. You essentially, like, you know, when we go sun tanning and we put baby oil on to make us reflective, it kind of sounds like that's what happened with your plants and why they burned. And I've just done so many things like that with my plants because I didn't know better and I didn't have the foresight to kind of put two and two together. So thank you for sharing. And I think that this specific one is going to save a lot of people this summer in their gardens with their house plants. So we appreciate you. Next up is a lesson learned from Laura and her Peruvian torch cacti.
Hi, this is your planty friend, Laura. Not sure if this is a plant fail, but definitely a lesson learned topic. Last winter and spring, my Peruvian torch cacti took a beating. Initially, I noticed they had a severe case of scale insects. I read up on it and did my research, and it led me to the Q-tip alcohol method, which, if you know anything about removing scale, this takes forever and is very tedious. I initially did this inside while it was still cold, but gave up and figured if the first signs of warmer weather, I would immediately take them outside and be more aggressive. When I say aggressive, I mean, instead of taking a Q-tip and wiping them one by one, I took a knife and scraped them vigorously while pouring alcohol all down their stems, which worked for removing the scale, but made horrible scars all down my cacti. Poor things looked like they went through a farmer's combine. And while I was at it, I figured it was a perfect time to propagate. I had a sharp knife and alcohol. What the heck? Let's do this. I just started sawing away. I felt like a lumberjack just going to town on these guys. What did I have to lose? They were already scarred to pieces. Why not cut them up? Needless to say, the propagation was the best thing I ever did. These guys were so happy all summer, battle wounds and all, and even produced several night blooms for the first time ever, which were amazing to watch. I did a time lapse on my Instagram story highlight if you're interested in watching.
So Laura's Instagram is linked in the show notes if anybody wants to watch her time lapse that she mentioned. Laura, I love the image of you sawing the cacti part like a lumberjack. That was really funny. This is a great lesson, though. You can salvage a plant by propagating a healthy part of it and then letting the plant take on new life if you can't necessarily salvage the mother plant. If you remember Leslie Halleck in my two-part series on indoor light, we briefly talked about her indoor citrus, and she said that she actually took cuttings of this indoor citrus in case that citrus got spider mites, which I thought was really smart. So I think I will definitely try doing this next time I have a plant that maybe gets pests, to take some cuttings and try and root them to make sure that I can ensure a healthy life for at least a part of the plant. Super smart. I feel like we've all had oopsie moments. That's what I call them. Like when I drop a beautiful new potted plant that I bought and the pot shatters on my floor and then the dirt goes everywhere. Has anyone else had one of those moments? So let's hear from Leslie about hers.
I just wanted to share my plant lesson and plant fail. It's kind of funny. I had purchased a small, like 4-inch Hoya compacta that when I got it home, I realized it was both variegated, which was awesome, but also was hiding some scale, which was not so awesome. So I tried several times to manually remove the scale, but that just wasn't cutting it. So I bought some neem oil. I took the plant out to my driveway, sprayed it off, and left it out there to dry. Well, the long story short is I forgot the plant was out there. I went to leave the house, and I ran over it with my car. I completely crushed it. Shards of pottery went everywhere. It was just a disaster. So I lost a rare plant, a container, and my dignity. Two lessons, though, that were learned from this was always check for parasites before you bring your plant home, and then just never leave it sitting on your driveway.
Girl, I am the clumsiest human in the universe. like ridiculously clumsy. So this story resonates with me so much. Also, I feel like I'm always doing 40 things at once. So like I would totally run my plant over with my car if I was trying to manage too many things at once. So thank you for your sense of humor. I'm sorry you lost that beautiful plant, Hoya compacta, such a cute plant. But I think that it's pretty safe to say that most people listening has probably had a moment like this, and we appreciate you just owning it and knowing that it's okay. Sometimes you just have little oopsie moments and life moves on. Next up is Kelly with a honeymoon plant fail.
My plant fail story actually happened this past summer. It was like a few months within my whole plant parenthood journey. I started in January. And then that summer, I went plant shopping at a new shop that opened up kind of around my area with my cousin. And I saw a Calathea ornata, which was so pretty because I had seen it all over Instagram. And I just loved like the pink stripes on the leaves. Anyway, I ended up getting it. And knowing that I had my honeymoon, which was like a 2-week vacation, about a month later. So I was able to take care of it pretty well. And then as the vacation started to approach, I was trying to leave some tips on how to care for my plant for the people who were going to be at home while I was away. So I had the pothos at work and a peperomia obtusifolia. And I knew how to take care of those ones really easily. I even left like a guide for my coworker to help me and know like when to water them. But I realized that I didn't know really what to do for my Calathea ornata. So I kind of just let that be, and my sister sent me some pictures while I was on vacation, and it was looking a little bit sad. And then by the time I got back, the plant, most of the leaves were curled up. There were probably 3 that seemed fine. And then I moved shortly after that, so also didn't really have enough time to take care of it. And then later I found out that it was a victim of, I think, underwatering. Probably lack of sunlight and also spider mites because I saw the webbing like on the leaves. Anyway, that taught me to definitely do my research before buying a plant and to not buy it just based on looks. It's really important to know how to take care of the plant and also not to buy house plants, especially ones that I don't really know how to take care of yet before I leave for a long vacation.
Kelly, first off, congrats on this incredibly exciting season of your life, man. Getting married, going on a honeymoon, moving. I think the biggest takeaway that I have from your story is, yes, it's very important to understand how to care for a plant that you're bringing home and make sure that you have the right conditions for it. But I also think it's super important to identify when the right time it is for you to bring home plants. You were in this crazy, amazingly abundant season of life. So obviously you weren't able to focus in on making sure a new plant is acclimatizing. Is that the word? Is getting used to your current apartment. So I think the lesson we can all take away is if you know that you're going to have a crazy travel season, if you know that you're going into a crazy season of life where you're not going to be home, that's maybe not the time to bring home a fancy new plant to you. You can bring home a snake plant in that season if you need to, if you need to bring something home, you know, or a low maintenance thing, but something fancy and sexy like that Calathea, maybe just wait till you're home from and nesting and with your new husband and your new home. And that's the time to kind of bring new stuff in. But once again, how do we learn this lesson until we've experienced it, right? So thank you for sharing, because I will certainly take this advice to heart when I am in my next crazy season and want to bring home a fancy plant. Next up is our plant friend, Lat.
My plant fail is that I got a euphorbia plant, a crown of thorns, and treated it like any other succulent and ended up underwatering it and killed it by accident. But I learned to always look up what you're getting instead of just saying, oh, it's this. I can just take care of it the way I did the others. But yeah, that's my plant fail story.
Lat, this is great advice. Every time we bring a plant home, we should always give it a quick Google and make sure we've got the growing conditions right. Especially if you're a new plant parent, even if you think you know, it's always good to give it a quick Google. How much time does a real Google actually take? Or talking with the plant shop owner about it. I think this is a lesson we all have to learn for ourselves. I want to learn it from you, but I know that I've had to continually learn this lesson as I bring plants home. And sometimes it just takes a couple of those plant fails to really make it stick, right? Last but not least, we have the lovely Ellie, who is one half of the Heirloom Plant Sisters duo on Instagram. They are so lovely, Miami-based sisters. Definitely go check out their Instagram. Ellie is actually who you heard in the cold open of this episode. She spoke so beautifully about the lessons that she learned about this specific experience with the Insta-worthy fiddly fig plant. So here is the story behind that beautiful quote from the opening of the episode.
I wanted to share a story about the very beginning of my plant journey. I've been a plant mom for a while, but I really started kind of hoarding plants like a year and a half ago. And I had been on the hunt for a fiddly fig for quite some time, but I hadn't gotten around to finally finding one down here. And when I did, I was so excited. I was going to love it. I was going to take care of it, and I was going to smother it with love. So I brought it home, and after reading and, you know, doing so much research, I put it in my living room. Now, I knew that my living room did not have the conditions for my fiddle leaf fig to thrive, but I did it anyway. I knew that I didn't have enough light. I knew it just wasn't nearly enough, so I did it anyway. And of course, it was not working out. It got very sad. It got very yellow. It started dropping leaves, but I was reluctant. I did not want to move it from there. I said, nope, I'm going to make it work. It's going to live here because it looks pretty and it's going to have to work. But eventually I realized it doesn't matter what I want. What's important is that the plant has what it needs, and clearly it's just not happy here. It's not getting the light that it needs. I need to do something about it. So after finally changing my mindset and saying, okay, I need to do this for the plant, and I moved it to another spot where it was getting indirect southern light for a good amount of the day, it started thriving. And thankfully, I did it in time where it didn't die completely, but granted, it lost a lot of its leaves and it did stunt the growth for a little while. Just because I was being selfish and I wanted it to live in my living room where it looked pretty, where it aesthetically just was so nice, but obviously that's not what the fiddle leaf needed. It needed to be somewhere that was going to give it sufficient light, that was going to make it thrive and give it the conditions that it needed. So I learned that despite what I may want in my living space, aesthetically, plants have needs. I learned a lot from that. I've grown a lot as a plant parent since then. I don't do that anymore. I do my research first before buying a plant, or if I have an impulse buy, I bring it home, but I definitely do some research before giving it a home in my own home. And my plants are happy now, and every now and then I still make a mistake or I'll still be a little bit selfish, but I've definitely learned a lot, and I hope to continue to learn from my plants like I always have.
Thanks, Ellie, for that beautifully spoken lesson that we can all understand and learn from. And thank you, everyone who called in for this episode. You are all amazing. I appreciate the effort it took for you to call in. I appreciate the vulnerability it took for you to share these plant fails. And I appreciate you educating our community. How fabulous is this? I want to continue to encourage you guys to support each other in the Bloom and Grow Garden Club, online. In the next time you're in a plant shop, make a friend. Ask them about the plant they're holding. Continue to engage with this plant community because you guys are all so incredibly special. And if you're interested in some new plant friend apparel, check the links in the show notes and go check out our new shop. We've got some really cool stuff. I'd love to see you rocking them on Instagram, on social media, or in real life sometime soon, because I know I will be living in them nonstop. As I said before, I literally have not taken off the Keep Blooming, Keep Growing gray crew neck sweatshirt since I got it, which is super gross, but it's actually true. Until next time, my plant friends, keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you are subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're making sure you're subscribed, why don't you head on over to the review section of whatever podcast player you're tuning into and leave us a review. I would greatly appreciate it. If you want to join the Bloom and Grow Garden Club, head over to bloomandgrowradio.com/garden-club to join the planty fun. When you join, you get a free download of the Keep Blooming print that Molly Mansfield made exclusively for us, and you will also get an email with the password to the private Facebook group, which is what I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. It is pretty amazing. For behind-the-scenes scoop, plant tips I learn along the way, and sneak peeks of future episodes, follow me on Instagram at @bloomandgrowradio. And plant friends, I'm here for you, so drop me a line if you have an idea for an episode, live event, or maybe if you're a planty business looking to sponsor the show. I am always here to help you keep blooming and keep growing.